Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. This radio program is being recorded for October 17th, 2020. And we're going to be looking at what good is good. Really, it's an interesting subject that all of you bring up. And I'm always fascinated by the way you phrase things and how you look at your life. It is very, very interesting to me. And I want to thank you, all of you who make this radio program possible, not only through your donations, but also through your questions. Without your questions, I wouldn't be here. And I want to thank all of you for being so kind. What good is good? What is good? Jesus was called good master or good man, and he said there is none good but God. There is all sorts of ideas and ideals about what good is and how good might work and what good is good. Good usually means that if something has happened that looks like we have gained something, or that something that is undesirable has been removed from us, or that there looks like there might be something in the future that might be good for us and that we might be gaining that. There's all sorts of ideals of good. Usually it has to do with the idea of gaining something that a person wants very much, and it occurs maybe through hard work, maybe through what people would call luck. I would not call it that. Maybe it would be some happy event where people are united. Whatever it is gratification for the emotional nature that all of us have within us, and that is what we call good. So let's get into the questions, and hopefully maybe I can clarify things a little better, and we can take a look at what good is good. The first question comes from Karen, and she says, she talks about the world, she talks about politics, talks about Mr. Trump, Mr. Biden, the whole thing, how government has been squabbling, as though government is everything. That's the thing that really... It's really strange to me about all of you is that you think government is the deal, and it isn't, but nonetheless. Anyway, so she ends up with, after four paragraphs of telling me about the world and giving me an update about how bad things are, she says, what good is good in this world? Karen. And she doesn't tell me where she lives. We live in impermanence. We live in the presence of impermanence all throughout this lifetime. This world, one of the basic laws is impermanence. And we don't really appreciate what that means. We just endure it. And because we're more interested in what is good for us and enduring the things we just don't understand, we miss the meaning and the significance of what is really happening in any given moment, that we are in an unfoldment of laws and principles that we have no clue about and no interest in. Those laws and principles are very simple. I talk about them in my commentaries, and I have talked about them in my TV programs, a lot of them, about what the world is all about. It is about, you have to understand, it is about living and how we're going to live and what we're going to choose to live by and for. Now, what are you going to live by and for? Most people have lost their inner compass, their spiritual compass. They have no idea, Karen, what spirituality is. It looks to them like some religious, philosophical, or even cult thing. Nothing is more culty than politics. A cult is any organization that surrounds itself around the idea of a particular person or thing. It is whenever I make a person or an object the centerpiece of my life, of my focus, my living, my thinking. And you can do this with religion. You can do it with politics. You could do it with your children. This is the way people are. They need something to live for. So when you start thinking about what good is, it is relevant to our personal bias and preferences that come out of that bias. So I may have a preference or some kind of bias towards the idea that there is something or someone in charge of this world that is taking care of it and will take care of me, and I can just walk through my life, la, 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 not really understanding what the heck is going on and not really applying myself to the laws and principles of this worldly life. And this worldly life is based on the idea of impermanence. And the one who understands that and can apply love to impermanence changes everything. It is love that changes everything. And applying it to the laws of impermanence here on this planet, here on this earth, is extremely important. Now, to be honest with you, Karen, most people do not have the mental acuity to be able to do this, to understand it, to even understand why they inhabit a fleshly body. They have no idea what they're doing here, nor do they care. They just want someone to tell them that life is meaningful, whatever, by the way they live. And that you, if you have a better life meaning more convenience, more gratuitous whatever that makes you feel important or makes you feel good about the fleshly body you have and the self that you and I have created out of the emperor of all malice within us, as long as all of that is working, then all of a sudden life is good. But as Superman said, as he flew away to go do battle to Lois Lane, he said, "Nothing good ever lasts long in this world." And that is all very true. And why? Because there is no love in our intent. There is no love in our livingness. Our love is based on the idea of gratification. Our love is based on the idea of what you give me, I'll give you. Tit for tat, that kind of thing. Our love is human love. And human love is very frail. It is petulant. Human love is very fragile. And human love, above all, is very conditional. And you can't change people from that. For 50 years, I've been a teacher, and I have found always throughout those 50 years the futility of trying to help people who only wanted human love and thought that human love was the purpose, the meaning, the significance of life. You ask me, what good is good in this world? It depends upon what you call good. If you call good your human bias, if you call good those things that benefit your body or your emotional mind and emotionality and your fervent biases, then it does no good at all. Authentic good, and you have to listen to me here, Karen, does not last long in this world. It just does not last long. Its beauty is destroyed by the belief and the content of hate and fear that we think makes our good happen. People have the oddest idea that goodness can be derived out of hate and fear. If you hate your enemy and blame your enemy for the lack of your own happiness, your own goodness, then you fail yourself. Because in that hatred towards another person, many things will start to happen to you. And those many things are in your karma. And they will occur. Believe me, they will. To stop my hatred, I have to be able to not want vengeance and not live in pride and not live in vanity. Those three things, greed, which I consider vanity, pride, which everybody has to the extent of defending their self. These things that I talk about are popular among people. Try to take away someone's pride. Try to show them that what they pride their life on is killing them, is diminishing their happiness, their goodness, diminishing their joy, I should really say. You can't do it because people believe that whatever is good makes them feel emotionally gratified and happy. And that's as far as it goes. That's the way we are. That's the way we do things. I can't change that in a person. My teachings are only as good as your ears, your willingness to drop your bias and prejudice about everything and anything. And if you're trying to make sense out of love, which is what most people do and make the big mistake of, you will find that you will miss all the most important things in life. You will miss love. We are here as and for the sake of a great love in us. Lori, what good is good in this world? Depends on who you are. Depends on what you're seeking. It depends on if you're seeking. It depends on you. Please forgive me. Namaste. Sometimes when I'm answering these very personal questions, I feel like I'm swimming up a waterfall in Niagara. Next one comes from Henry. He says, I've been good all my life. Why do I have to suffer in this world? And then he goes into the things that he feels are unfair that happened to him. You know, I can make a mountain out of a molehill if I want. And I can make a molehill appear to be something much more important than it is and not see the significance of it. One of the things I've learned over the years of my life and in my teaching career is that nothing really is personal, and yet everything is personal. It happens to, first of all, the personage of me. And if I take it that way, that it's my fault or a personal thing, then I will miss. I will miss the significance. So, Henry, look for the significance in things, not for the reason of them. Try to understand that maybe some of the things, all of them, that happen to us are opportunities for us to awaken to another degree. And my resistance towards that awakening becomes a problem. And I make it a problem. I am the problem. So rather than making change or making some situation that augments itself into something or morphs itself into something that it never was before, and being uncomfortable about it or being critical about it, instead of taking it all personally, maybe it would be good for us to take a look at what's happening in a objective way. Just to sit and watch and not take it personally. And yet understand it is happening and trying to help maybe you understand the state of your person. Now, if you take it that way, instead of as an insult, if you can see it as the state of your person and not take it as a chide on the personage of you, then you will see things in a different light, maybe. You say you've been good all of your life. How do you know? How do you know you've been good? How do you know you haven't been making evil appear good? How do you know? How do you know that your selfishness, your pride, your vanity, your greed, how do you know that you're not doing that? If you weigh yourself against or with the collective unconscious here on the planet, if you weigh yourself in the method and mythology of what is good in this world, in the Western world, you'll see you're being deluded, you're being led along, and you're being led astray. Now, if you really want to do that, if you really want to think of it in that way, there you are. Now you can have a chip on your shoulder and run the rest of your life thinking that everybody else is wrong and poor me, poor Henry, you know, he's been good all his life. He didn't do anything to hurt anybody. He's getting all this backlash or whatever it is that you're facing that is uncomfortable to you or doesn't seem deserving. And you can ask yourself, well, I didn't do anything. I'm just like everyone else. And I didn't do this and I didn't do that. And how come I'm getting this and how come I'm getting that? You're a wino. And if you want to whine about it, then that's your reward. But if you want to do something a little different, maybe something more objective, you might want to look at the biases you hold within yourself. Those biases of assuming you know what is right. You know what is good. You know what is real. If you give up those biases and can just sit inside yourself without those biases guiding you and telling you you're a this, you're a that, this is what's fair, this is what's not fair. If you can sit back and just watch, you will see. Honestly, you will. Even if you only get it for a brief moment. That the emperor of all malice within us, that ego, that vanity, that pride, is in charge, not you. And if you identify with those three things, if you identify with the emperor of all malice, then you're going to have these things in your life and they're going to appear to be your life. You can change anything in this life. You can transform anything. You have the ability to transform water into wine, metamorphosis. But to do that, it will require that the influence over you is more love than hate, more compassion than hate, than self-righteousness in hate, which is the biggest illness in our world today, to have a sense of rightness over the hate we have. Now, if you can just stand back a little bit, meditatively, compassionately, taking a different point of view about love, love will arise in you. You will see love as something totally different than what you have ever thought of love as being before. It is not an emotional thing. It is not about the grandeur of emotionalizing our life and making our emotions the point of gratification in our life. No. You will start to see that love is life itself. And that by harming another person for whatever reason, harming yourself for whatever reason, defining good by the human emotions and the human premise as good, all of that is futile. And that you don't really need to do that. There are other ways of looking at your life than the one the human body, the human brain wants you to look at it from. There is the objective viewpoint of compassion and forgiveness. Something for you to think about. And I'm sure would take a lot of energy, Henry, on your part, and a complete shift in your life. And this shift is not something that most of us relish very much. I hope that helped you, and please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question, this comes from Frank. He does not tell me where he lives either. Is there a God of good, really, Greg? Because if there is, I don't see it, Frank. I do not define God, okay? I'm not going to sit here and say, yes, there's a God of good. I'm not going to say things like that. Frank, if you've listened to me long enough and my tirades on this traditional viewpoint of defining God, as most people do, you would know I don't do things like that, and that's not the way the truth of the light. What you really should be asking is, how come I don't harmonize with life itself? What is my problem? People don't want to harmonize with life. They don't want to see their livingness for the sake of love. They don't want to see that we're here to have a metamorphosis into love, and that love is the way of our life and the meaning and the significance. We don't want to see that. We don't want to talk about it. We're afraid of love because it, to us, makes us vulnerable. And the vulnerability is that something, quote unquote, bad could happen if you let love live you. I have people in my audience that just don't even understand what that means, let love live you. They don't get it. Why? Because hate has been their love. You've got to start looking at, Frank, how you define good and what the premises are of good in your life and how you believe good is obtained. Is it something you obtain or is it something you attain? Two different things. To obtain good, you have to go out into the world and hit your head up against the wall a lot and work real hard and manipulate, lie, cheat, and steal. If you attain, you attain to it from within yourself, dropping your ideals of right and wrong, good and bad, and seeking the way over the belief in good and bad and right and wrong. You have to have some courage in doing that because most people won't go that far. It is too, quote unquote, scary, end quote. I don't get it. You have nothing else to live for in this world except the goodness that lives within you and finding that as the love that lives within you. And if you find that, you may have found what people call God. Jesus said, God is love. I do not quibble over that at all. I believe that is the totality of our whole life. And I have found it within myself, and I have found it in other people. I find it in everyone around me, and that is just the way it is. Does everyone understand this love? Does everybody want it? Does everybody seek it? No. But that doesn't make it any less real or any less valuable. You have to want love more than wanting what you think is love. That comes from Siraj here. I'm out of here. Thank you, Frank, for your beautiful question. I hope I was able to help you, and forgive me. Namaste. Well, I have some more wonderful questions. It's getting towards election time, and everybody's thinking about that. So here we go. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.